Hello, and welcome to the Paul Cardall Podcast.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
It's been a long time.
I know it has. And I just talked to your friend, Kenneth Cope. Yeah.
And Peter, and you've been talking with a lot of people.
Did you hear any of that episode with Peter?
I did. Yeah, I loved it. It was like memory, walk down memory lane.
This was the one everybody about the...
Yeah.
Peter Breinholt and I did this thing. There's part one and part two, exploring Mormon music and LDS culture. This was through our perspective. So, and you're a big part of that, Julie.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, that was fun to listen to. I'm trying to think if I had... one piece that I know about. My dad's company was Embryo Music that did all the early stuff. And then Jeff Simpson and his group bought it. And then it became Excel Entertainment. And then Deseret Book bought that.
That's awesome. Did you?
That was fun.
Did you love doing all that stuff with your music?
It was great. It was really a good 20 years of my life that was... And it was stressful, like having kids and being in school and doing therapy and doing music and kind of did a lot at the same time. So stressful too.
Well, that's what I want to talk about, because you've got 30 years experience as a doctor helping families. And one of your specialties is navigating messages within the LDS culture.
Mm-hmm.
And your podcast is reaching a lot of people. And at the same time, you get a lot of crap.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I do. I've worked with primarily, not solely, but primarily practicing in Utah for 30 years.
Okay.
Primarily Latter-day Saint clients or people around that, you know, that culture is prevalent, whether you're in the church or not. So I've been dealing with Latter-day Saint cultural issues, and you know, just I've kind of heard just heard everything. So there's a lot.
It keeps you busy, because even in other cultures, Baptist community, Methodist communities, Catholic communities, all of those people, we're all navigating, you know, what is taught and what is really, well, I don't want to say what is really, what is taught and what is going on.
Yeah.
Trying to bridge understanding. Yeah. So you've been doing
the application, right? How to apply things in a healthy way. That's kind of
what
I'm trying to think. Okay, is there a healthier way to apply this belief system, you know, in a way that doesn't do damage?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good. So my, you know, I've done, I think this is 80 podcasts. And I'm very specific about guests, and everybody has these unique, amazing, diverse things that they do. And I've talked to, you know, like a Catholic priest about, you know, explain some of these ideas about celibacy and like, do you worship Mary? And I've talked to like Dallas Jenkins, who is non-denominational, creating the chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to dive into LDS culture, because a lot of people know a Mormon. It seems so strange to us, having grown up in the culture and everything, but everybody knows a Mormon. They're always like, man, they're the nicest.
They're the nicest.
They're the nicest, you know, but they don't live with the people. So they're the nicest. And yet they're still quite unfamiliar.
Yeah.
You know, we always laugh about polygamy. We laugh about the Book of Mormon musical. And I've tried to explain, look, there's 80 breakoffs from the original church, the corporate church that kind of evolved out of Brigham Young, is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So a couple questions I have for you that I've actually written down, because you are PhD, and I want to be specific, because I'm just an artist.
So, I'm an artist too, so we'll speak artist to artist, and you know, we'll figure this out.
perfect. So I think one of the main questions is why, in discussing Mormonism, you know, with Christian pastors, I've got a lot of friends in the Christian music industry.
Mm-hmm.
We do refuge together. We do retreats together for burnout. So most are fascinated by the ability from the outside in. They're looking and they see these strong family values, the church that fiercely defends values. Why do you think that is? I mean, you're inside looking out, but why do you think the vast majority of the religious world looks at Latter-day Saints, aka Mormons, a word we're not supposed to say anymore, Latter-day Saints as family?
Good
people.
Well, I think we do family really well, right? That's a huge emphasis. Investing in your families here and through eternity. A lot of time is spent with family. And as a therapist, I'm like, there's also enmeshment that comes with close families, which is not health, which is unhealthy closeness. So, but I think we do as a group do families really, really well because we value those relationships. But along with that comes valuing conformity, which can then be a problem. Okay. So, you know, the therapist in me always is like, okay, yes, this is a strength, but there's also this underside to everything that I see in my practice. But yeah, there are tons of great Latter-day Saint families who love each other, who are highly invested in each other's, you know, success and growth. And so we do that well. We also do appearance well. So there are a lot of families that look really, really put together that are not that put together when you kind of peel back the curtain.
That's kind of sociology 101. When you have people that share the same passions, it's keeping up appearances. And
yeah.
One thing I've noticed is that, you know, as a Christian and going to small groups and fellowshipping, there seems to be more of an openness that I didn't experience in the Latter-day Saint culture. People hide confession. They save it for the bishop, or they save it for priesthood leaders. They don't necessarily, and it builds up inside. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, for the past 6-7 years that I've been involved intently with, you know, non-denominational, I'm like a safety on the football team. I just, wherever the Lord sends me. But there seems to be this more liberating feeling that I can sit down with people and they know exactly who I, they know my sins, they know how flawed I am. And what is it about the culture that keeps people from having these type of vulnerable conversations?
I think there's a lot to that. I think, like you said, whenever you get a homogenous group, there's kind of this, people are trying to position in a hierarchy because it's, the church is structured as a hierarchy. Well, society is structured as a hierarchy. So we have in Utah, I grew up in Southern California. So this was foreign to me. When I moved here, it was like, what is happening? Because there's just a lot more ethnic, racial, religious diversity there. But so I think here, or at least you in Utah culture, and I think this extends beyond as well with Latter-day Saints, we misinterpret "be therefore perfect" as "be externally flawless," as looking perfect instead of actually being whole, ripe, and complete in Christ. In love, right? That's the scripture in the New Testament is about all about love and coming to Christ, not about external perfection. But we tend to think that we need to be and do and earn our way, and we forget about grace. And so I think sometimes we're out of balance that way. And so, you know, if you look like you got it together, then you must be righteous. You must be, you know, if your kids look good, then you're a good parent and you're dedicated. And it's so the opposite of the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? Like it's not based on ranking or being better than, right? The first shall be last, the last shall be first. It's like that whole, you know, social process that happens is not congruent with Christ's teachings.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it's just a real human thing. It's not specific to Latter-day Saints, but there is an interesting dynamic when you get a bunch of people together.
Yeah. Well, it's a church of gathering. You know, you gather together, and so it does have all those elements that we're talking about. One of the things I want to talk about, and of course, guide me as a therapist, as though I'm coming to you with this issue, and I'm going to kind of lay this out for everybody. Okay. So the LDS Church today is a global church who says they've had more than 17 million people receive baptism. It's a lot of people. And this is, it began with only six members in New York in 1820, with headquarters being moved to Ohio, then to Missouri, Illinois, and finally Utah. Sorry, people that pronounce it Illinois. This largely was in part to persecution. People gathered, they voted together. There was a lot of persuasion by what the leaders were telling the people to do. And then Joseph Smith, the founder, was assassinated in 1844. And one of his 12 apostles, he led the majority of the believers to Utah. And of course, most of those were European converts that he had presided over. So he had won them over. When Missouri issued an extermination order, a lot of people don't know this. The United States approved to exterminate anyone who followed Mormon theology, and so they were forced to leave. And converts from across the Atlantic, they also left their homes for this cause. You know, we talk a lot about hardship, sacrifice, death of those who didn't make it, and overall persecution of leaders. It's honored. Like every year we obsessively talk about the suffering as we participate in, you know, parades, and we light fire, we do fireworks. There's a big celebration July 24th, and growing up it was like, great, we get fireworks twice a month. So some have suggested that those who are generational Mormons, you know, I'm a fifth generation. My great-grandmother's grandfather was the third president, John Taylor. So those who are generational, these experience what is called persecution complex, which is an irrational and obsessive feeling or fear that we as a church, you know, when you're in the church, when you're part of the church, that we've always been mistreated, misunderstood. And so there are families, and I see this in the South, they don't associate or let their kids associate with people of that also believe in Jesus Christ. They tend to isolate into their own, you know, the people they know that share the same beliefs. It's kind of like the Indian community or the Islam community. They all kind of stick to themselves. So I'm not just saying this is one thing the LDS Church does, but as a therapist, can you talk about persecution complex and kind of elaborate on what I'm saying? I'm sure you've thought about this.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of things that come to mind. I think that's real, right? We are impacted by the experiences of our predecessors, right? And there is truth to that. Like, they were persecuted. They were, and they're Mormons get made fun of all the time, right? So there's some truth to that. and so I haven't actually met people where that's like a big, huge thing, but I think what you're talking about might be different, like the kind of isolating. I don't think it's fear of persecution. What I think it is just familiarity. And because the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints requires so much time, energy, money, it's like, there's only so much that we have to give. And then big families. So if you have, you know, one more child than the average, or, you know, a lot, I'm from a family of nine. That's a lot of relationships to maintain. And then you have those relationships at church, and you have church callings, and you're visiting people. And sometimes it's just like, there's just not enough energy and time to branch out. Like, my social needs are met within my community, and I'll be nice, but Like, I don't want to have to get to know all the neighbors to see if we have the same values so my kids can go play. You know, and it happens a lot in Utah that people who are not of the LDS faith feel isolated. And my suggestion to them when I've seen them in therapy is let your LDS neighbors know your values. Mm-hmm. That you have the same value. That's really a concern, right? I don't want my kid to go and they're, you know, doing drugs or they're watching, you know, X-rated movies or who knows, right? And so I think just letting LDS people know your values, it's like, that's a concern too. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we sometimes trust like, oh, they're LDS, they have the same values, which is not always the case. So we just make that, you know, we tend to make that assumption.
This is really good because I think it helps people understand why their Latter-day Saint neighbors are not always available.
Right. It's a huge commitment, right?
Lifestyle.
My husband was just released as a bishop. I mean, that's like, he has a full-time job, 40 plus hours a week, plus 20 hour a week volunteer job, plus family, plus, right? Like it's a lot. It's a lot of time and energy. I think we're just tired sometimes, right?
I did it, but I got to tell you that when you have an assignment given to you, the LDS church, when you show up, they want to give you an assignment. When you go to a Christian church, you have to plug yourself in. Mm. It's this interesting dynamic.
Interesting.
They're not calling on you to do something. They're encouraging you to sign up. They're encouraging you. You know, it's kind of like a small group in Latter-day Saints, which is called Relief Society for the Women. Small group for men is called Elders Quorum. And, you know, you send out a volunteer sheet. But in the Mormon culture, the second you choose baptism, they give you like, you got to go teach kids and you don't even know
what you're teaching.
Yeah. But I think in doing that, I've tried to explain to a lot of my pastor friends that that is what keeps the parish, the congregation glued, serving each other and, you know, not getting paid, but volunteering and having that commitment to do it.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking after each other in a positive way.
Right.
Rather than what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. And another thing that kind of jumping back to the strong families, mm-hmm. there is a community of people that is supporting each family. Mm. Right. Like I have a 16-year-old daughter. She has this really core group of adult women who care about her, teach her, nurture her, mentor her, ask her to babysit. Like those kind of support systems are really rare in our modern world. And so I think the support of the community can be a support to the family because those women then can give her what I lack.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you feel safe. You feel that your kids are safe.
The LDS and somebody's church. Investing in them other than just you.
Yeah. It definitely provides mentors. And, you know, it's like when you're a teenager and you're assigned to go with an older gentleman who is very, you know, he's got a career and you go visit, as a young man, you go and visit people. Like, when was the last time, I asked my pastor, when was the last time you visited with one of the other pastors somebody's house? And they only do it when people are sick or they get invited to dinner. And so I just talked about how, you know, it's a monthly thing. It can get overwhelming, but yeah, the idea of looking after each other, basically, that brings a lot of understanding, I think, to why the families are so...
Yeah.
So valued. And we will be right back.
Album announcement by Paul Cardall. Not only is Paul a podcast host, but has gifted the world with award-winning music that's brought comfort to millions of listeners in more than 160 nations. His latest album, Return Home, is an introspective listening experience. Each song, carefully crafted, takes listeners on a cinematic journey to the lands of his ancestors. In all, Return Home features 13 songs. Whether you just need to relax, study, meditate, pray, or for some other healthy reason, Paul's music helps create an atmosphere of peace wherever you are. Add Paul Cardall's album Return Home to your favorite platform, whether it's iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, or some other. For the sheet music and more information, visit www.paulcardall.com.
One of your big focuses is women within the church. There are, well, let me talk about my own daughter. She is 17 and she was dating this guy and she was excited to finally meet his dad, but she was wearing a little midriff. Okay. You could see a little bit of her skin. And she was excited to meet him. And right off the bat, he looked her up and down and looked at his son and said, you know, you're dating a girl who doesn't appreciate modesty, and this is not going to help you go on a mission.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry. I'm having a physical reaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and stop looking me up and down, you creep.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a reflection of all, you know, look, I'm not going to generalize, but I think there's creeps everywhere, but the...
Right, but like to...
Modesty.
To have that judgment mentality of like, I'm judging you based on your appearance, first off, like, that's just so wrong.
You've seen this a lot, and you've helped a lot of women and young women who feel like there's this culture that's beating them down because there's this high standard.
Yes. So purity culture is part of this, the modesty culture. So what I try to put out there is women are more than their bodies, which I think modest clothing, trying to cover up women, is another form of objectification. Mm-hmm. It's trying to avoid sexual objectification, but then it like replaces it with another form of objectification, because now we just see women as bodies, what's covered, what's not, instead of as human beings. So it's a form of objectification. And I don't know if you saw this, but on Instagram, I had people send me their young women camp lists and their young men camp lists. And I didn't do any commentary. I just posted, and whether it was a young men's or, and I highlighted a couple of things, but not once did it say shorts to the knees for boys. Not once did it say, you know, you must wear a t-shirt at all times when you're swimming. Mm. It did not say no tank tops. Like all these things were spelled out for the girls, but there's nothing. It's like, bring a swimsuit, bring a, you know, didn't say no Speedos, no. So it was just a stark contrast. And actually some of the young women camps have improved, and they just kind of said shorts, two pairs of shirts, you know, so they weren't all, but it just juxtaposing those two lists really had an impact on people. Like, oh my gosh, we are trying to control what girls wear. Why aren't we doing this? Why are we just focusing on girls and not on boys? And you know, people kind of said, well, I've made some changes in my ward or with my camp because we're not having the word modest in our list. Anyway, so I do stuff like that, trying to just illuminate, like, this is not helpful. And it breeds judgment of other people, and it breeds objectification. And it also breeds sexualization. So if your shoulders are supposed to be covered, or your knees or your stomach, like, we've somehow sexualized that. It's like, they're just shoulders. They're just knees, just a belly button. Like, why is a girl's midriff sexual and a boy's, you know, without a shirt is not? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So anyway, I have a lot of fun just trying to play around with the messages and challenge Like, is this helpful? No, it's not helpful.
And it shouldn't be complicated. But your Instagram is fantastic because you have so many valuable things there that challenge people, that explain things. And so, yeah, I admire and appreciate what you're doing because I know it takes time.
Yeah.
To do the social media. But that's how you get your messages out these days.
Yeah.
I think the modesty thing, the purity culture, I think we've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And in, you know, in more in LDS culture, you know, from the beginning when you have plural marriage, you know, back in those days, women were property, but they,
right.
were, you know what I mean? Under the United yeah. States, everybody,
right.
Women could not vote. It wasn't, I think, until
early 1900s.
Yeah. 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 So I think a lot of that is played into faith rather right. than some religion going, this is this and this is that.
Right. There's a long history of women being disempowered and being owned and not having rights. And yeah. and so I think it's that kind of gets to one of my main messages is like, take responsibility for your life, step into your power and create your life. Mm-hmm. Like this is your life and just don't wait for external voices to tell you to dictate what you need to do and who you need to be, that's your stewardship.
Yeah. It's faith. It's faith.
Yep.
Okay. So this leads to this, this was a question. So we were talking about persecution complex a minute ago. So Latter-day Saints are promised by priesthood leaders a lot of things in heaven if they live up to everything that is taught to them by leaders and in the temple where Mormons can only go that qualify. They make covenants to obey. Wives submit to husbands who submit to God, although I think they recently updated that. But in teachings and temple rituals, Latter-day Saints are anointed kings and queens, priests and priestesses in the eternities, that they'll rule. Like, this is, you see why outsiders go, this is fascinating.
They're like, yeah, like what?
They're going to rule with Christ as joint heirs. They're promised like worlds without numbers and so much. People come out of the temple and they share like, we were promised this and this. I don't know if they're supposed to say that or not, but do you think this type of theology breeds a sense of narcissism? The fact that you've already been anointed to be like God and nobody else has?
I wouldn't say narcissism. I would say in this twisted way, pride.
Okay.
Like this better than, right? Like, well, we have the, and it's not just LDS people that have that. I mean, I think that's just another human thing. And I think a lot of religions think that theirs is the right one or the best one or, and so it goes back to that ranking again, right? Like who's better than, so I do think there's this, there can be this pride of like, because we all have a need to be special. And I think it gives LDS people a lot of specialness.
More affirmation.
Right. Like I'm, and we all want to be special and significant and important. And, you know, and so I think it might feed into that a little bit. I think that's kind of what you're getting at. But I think it also makes really committed, obedient, kind of perfectionistic people too.
Uh-huh.
Right. Like I need to kind of get my act together here so I can have this reward. And so it's like, I'm going to do whatever I can here to try to get there. And I think, you know, I've seen a lot of perfectionism that kind of is born out of that mentality that's not healthy.
Yeah. And again, we're not trying to beat up on the church. I'm just trying to bring understanding to some of the most interesting theologies.
Well, but also called, there's also the theology that everybody has that potential. This isn't just, right? Like,
but
right? Like everybody has that potential.
But I.
But they won't all realize it, and I have it now. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Is there's it's like, and I hate to say it, it's like you've reached a certain status in the company, and so you're kind of like, well, we need to go help them, type thing. And I know this is all like really good, pious. I don't want to call it self-righteous, pious self-righteousness, but maybe it's just human nature, all this stuff.
I think it is. I think there it's that trying to prove our worth instead of just knowing that we are inherently good and loved.
Now, here's another question. We see a lot of people leaving religion in general today. So it's not just one church over another. People are abandoned since COVID, you know, people weren't going into the building.
Yeah.
And it was really beautiful to do church at home. You know, my wife and I, we did communion, we did prayer, we did everything. It was so spiritual.
I loved it. It was my favorite time. I loved it.
Yeah. Just, but then we all go back.
Beautiful.
Go back into the buildings, but it was at that time that I'm wondering if we, because we had such powerful spiritual experiences, that we decided, I don't know, I think we'll just stick with what we're doing. Or we saw a lot of people just quit, a lot of faith crisis, a lot of decisions just to, you know, walk the path they feel is the right path for them. So why do you think there's so many people shifting gears on their journey?
Oh, I think that's a really big, big question. I think there are so many factors. Mm-hmm. Like on, you could look at it from any level, right? Like religion used to provide answers to the unanswerable. And we have a heck of a lot of answers now with scientific findings. And we can explain, you know, what's happening in the brain. And we can, like, there's a lot of ways to explain, you know, religions used to, you know, how did the sun get hung in the sky, and like mythology and all these kinds of things. And it would explain things that were unexplainable, but now we can explain a lot of things. And so I think that's a factor. I think that, I think COVID was, people realized like, I'm actually fine. Like I can actually connect with God without my church. I mean, church's goal is to help you connect with deity. Right? It's like, if I don't need it. So I think people kind of got this really interesting experiment where it's like, well, I've heard a lot of people say, I feel closer to Christ than I ever have before. Not going to church. And so I think people are giving themselves permission to choose their life and to kind of challenge the traditions that have been handed down to them in a lot of different ways, not just religiously, but just emotional patterns. And, you know, it's just, there's more, people are kind of feeling freer to do, change careers, to, you know, not take on the family business, to, I just think there's a lot more freedom.
Yeah.
And then the internet is a huge factor. I know that in the Latter-day Saint faith tradition, there have been things that have not been talked about that are now accessible to people. And that kind of makes people go, wait a second, how come I wasn't taught this? And every religion or every system has those.
Yeah.
Every family has, you know, secrets they would rather not talk about. But the family secrets are out now for the church. And it's like people are having to deal with shifting the narrative that is different from what they learned. And so I think specifically with Latter-day Saints, that's an aspect that's going on right now.
And isn't it a fact that when you have such a tight-knit community, that kind of everybody knows what's going on? So if there's this attack on a narrative that was created in order to teach the very basic people, like kids in primary that know nothing, and then, you know, the new convert who's 80 years old out in, I don't know, Lithuania, they have to formulate a narrative. This is what every church does. You know, that's why there's four gospels that tell the same story, but they totally disagree on all the details. And we're seeing that with the LDS church that there, it used to be the idea that the church is restored. And then the first time I heard Elder Bednar, you know, him and I wrote this song one by one, and we went and saw it performed in the Missionary Training Center. And it was the first time I ever heard one of the senior leaders, an apostle, say the church is being restored. So it was a shift in words, and words are so dangerous, but they're also so perfect. Like how you communicate a message. So they're in the
powerful.
They're in the process of, how do you think this has been affecting, like people you visit with in your practice? Because we are seeing a major shift in the narrative.
Oh, it's throwing a lot of people for a loop. And of course I see in my practice, in my clinics, we see an overrepresentation of people who are struggling, because that's why they're seeking therapy, because things aren't going so well in one area or another. But one of the most common reasons people seek support in my clinics is like faith crisis, faith transition kind of things, or mixed faith marriages, like one member of the couple leaves the church, the other stays, and how to navigate that. So it's a big theme that I see a lot and hear a lot about online too.
Yeah. And you're a strong believer?
I am a nuanced believer.
What is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Clarify.
Yeah. I guess you could say I'm a cafeteria Mormon. Like everyone is, though I have to clarify, everyone picks and chooses what to focus on at any given time, because there's so much, you can't focus on everything, right? Yeah. So I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. So I kind of put everything like, is this what Christ would do, say, or be? Is this like filtering it through the lens of like, is this loving? And if it's not, then I don't have to buy it.
So if you're not living in that culture and you're in a completely different circumstance and you're, you think you could find what you have in some other form of some other type of denomination?
I don't know, because I was formed in this faith tradition.
Okay.
I'm sure I could find truth. There's truth in all over. There's truth in every religion. So I am not a like, I know everything and no one else knows, you know, no way. There's truth everywhere. There are people that are speaking truth and sharing truth in, you know, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm a truth seeker and a love seeker. Like my goal is to be filled with love and light. And so I think that's part of who I am, but I think I've been formed in this faith tradition. So it's hard to know, but I think I'd still be a seeker of truth and love and light, no matter where I was, but it, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I appreciate you getting emotional on that, because it shows your convictions. And you and I hear this all the time, the idea that Mormons are not Christian. What's your typical response when somebody says, oh, well, they're not going to be saved because they don't believe in the real Jesus?
I say, well, you can think that, but I don't. That's not what I believe. You know what's interesting? I didn't mention this, but I went to an evangelical Christian private school growing up.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I'm very familiar with, I mean, I was told I wasn't going to heaven and stuff like that at school. Yeah. But I say, well, I try to follow Christ. I don't know what else that makes. Like, isn't that the definition?
Yeah.
And if you have to belong to a certain denomination to claim that you're a Christian, then a lot of people think they're Christian who aren't.
By their fruits, you shall know them.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm going to ask you one last question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a personal question, because you are the doctor.
Uh-oh.
I want to know. So obviously I can say, okay, well, this is her clinical. I mean, how often do you mix those two? Do you keep those separate, your faith and your, or is it all kind of relative?
I actually don't see clients directly anymore. I run four therapy clinics that I own and run. And so I have therapists that work for me, but the ethical way to do therapy is I don't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. If my client brings in their faith, then we work with their faith.
Okay.
But I don't assume that if we share a faith that I understand their beliefs, because that's going to be unique to them.
Okay.
So I would never bring in my beliefs unless that was brought in by the client and there was some reason some rationale for sharing, for self-disclosing something about myself. Mm-hmm. So no, I am not one of those that is like, you know, I have the truth and I'm going to teach it. That's therapy is not the place. It's what the client, you use what the client brings in.
Yeah.
If they don't bring in religion, we don't ever talk about religion. I might ask, like, what are your, you know, do you have any spiritual beliefs or what are your beliefs about the meaning of life or, you know, but I'm not going to bring in any specific religion.
Yeah. It's wise. It's very wise. Okay.
It's ethical. It's ethical.
Yeah. That's true. There are the rules.
Yeah.
What is your advice or how do you feel or think for the salvation of those who have decided, look, I just can't do Mormonism anymore. I feel I'm supposed to go this way. Do our feelings betray us or do you think God has a bigger plan or what's your mission?
I think God is so much bigger than anyone can imagine. I have so much faith. Like, I don't fear, like, who am I to fear for anyone's salvation or path? Like, I got to figure out my own, right? Like, I have a child who has left the church. Mm-hmm. We have an awesome relationship. I don't worry about her. It doesn't cause me any pain. Like, people have their own path. And that's part of what I try to emphasize is, like, you have to listen to that. Like, how else is God going to talk to you if not through you? like how?
Yeah.
And so my path doesn't look like other people who are in the faith. And, you know, I really think it's about, are you loving people? Are you trying to make the world a better place? Are you serving people? Like, that's all that matters.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's all that matters. And so I just don't really worry about it. I don't care. Like, I'm happy that you're happy. And, you know, I don't think God cares. Like, oh, you left. I just don't think. And in that way, I'm a progressive Latter-day Saint, right?
And I appreciate that, you know, we share that same belief is that, you know, the story starts with a garden in all of its kind variety. You know, you got the roses, you got the tulips, you got this, and everybody is so different. But each of us has a specific purpose in living and what we're breathing out and what we're breathing in, just like these beautiful, diverse flowers that God's created. Yeah. And so I appreciate that. What is the best way for people to, is it your Instagram, your website? What is the best way for people?
Yes, yes, and yes. So at Dr. Julie Hanks on social media. So Dr. Julie Hanks. My website's drjuliehanks.com. And then my therapy website for people in Utah or Arizona is wasatchfamilytherapy.com.
Great.
So I have a great team of therapists. And we work with a variety of clients, not just LDS clients or people around the church, but we see everybody. So I think one of the greatest gifts of being a therapist is that I get to see people's hearts,
mm-hmm.
like really, not just the facade that we talked about earlier. I get to see hearts, like what's going on in their life, what their pain is, what their burdens are. And so it's like, it's helped me to be a lot less envious of other people because I'm like, I have no idea what burden. We have no idea what burdens other people are carrying.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's made me just more grateful and more compassionate. It's like that people do things for a reason, you know, people who you don't understand, there's a good reason they're not that it's not always an excuse for bad behavior, but it's like people make sense and we need to be more loving and compassionate. And that, I think that's just kind of the bottom line for therapy and for faith.
Well, your message resonates with so many people because you're beloved. And, if you're not doing well, you're also getting attacked. And so listen, we love you.
Thanks.
Everybody go and check out, Julie's website. I'll put everything in the notes.
Okay.
But, I truly appreciate you taking the time and listen, going down memory lane with the music. You were one of my favorite artists. You wrote the song Masterpiece, which is one of my favorite things from that time. And so really good to talk to you.
It's great to talk with you, Paul.
I appreciate it. If you ever need anything, let me know.
Okay, same, right back at you.
All right, Julie, we'll talk
to you. Okay, take good care. Okay.
So every day I pray, write His will upon my heart.